Coming up on Tech News Today, the Surface Pro launched for good or for ill. A cybersecurity crisis is brewing, but is it just ginned up? And are you being tracked by the military? Maybe. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, February 11th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients from anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use promo code TNT. And by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker looking for video, photos, illustrations, music, sound effects, After Effects templates, or 3D models, check out Pond5. And for an exclusive 50 free stock media files, go to pond5.com/TNT. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone, get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakta.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day. The news fuse. The New York Times' Nick Bilton reports sources tell him Apple is experimenting with wristwatch-like devices made of curved glass. Now, Corning makes a bendable product called Willow Glass that would likely be used in such a product. Apple is constantly experimenting with prototypes of new products.
Forget music. During the Grammys award show last night, Google was all the rage, aired a new commercial highlighting the Nexus 4 and Google Now running inside Jelly Bean. In the ad, you see weather and train schedules and local guides and translation features of Google Now. Is this the first of many Google TV campaigns to go up against Apple's Siri? We shall see.
Bloomberg reports President Obama will issue an executive order that would set up a voluntary program of cybersecurity standards for companies operating important U.S. infrastructure. It would also have the government share more information about computer threats with private companies. The order is expected as soon as next week and has been in the works since at least last fall.
Australia would like to see Apple, Adobe, and Microsoft in its office right now. All three companies have been summoned to speak at a public hearing on March 22nd in Canberra to answer questions about pricing. An Australian government committee handling an IT pricing inquiry has met resistance from the three companies, thus the official summons.
Contract-free mobile carrier Solavay is the first mobile carrier to offer the BlackBerry Z10 in the U.S. It's available today through Solavay's retail partner, GSM Nation, for $9.99. The company offers customers unlimited voice, text, and data plans in limited coverage areas for $49 a month. Also offers customers the opportunity to get commissions by recommending the service to friends and family. This is a trend we're seeing a lot of these days.
European wireless carriers Vodafone, UK, and Austria are warning subscribers not to update their iPhone 4Ss to iOS 6.1 because the upgrade apparently causes performance issues with 3G connectivity. Vodafone says Apple is working on a solution.
The Guardian reports Raytheon has developed software capable of tracking people's movements and predicting future behavior based on their publicly available postings to social networks. Raytheon says it has not sold the software named Riot for Rapid Information Overlay Technology to any clients, but it has shared it with the U.S. government as part of a joint research and development effort. Raytheon says the data can be shared without personally identifiable information being disclosed.
A patent-holding company called Rembrandt Social Media is working with the family of a deceased Dutch computer programmer named, this is not going to be good, Johannes Joseph Everardus Vandermeer, and has sued Facebook for infringing two patents based on an online diary program. Vandermeer founded a company called Aduna and started working on implementing ideas in his patents and had registered surfbook.com. Vandermeer passed away in June 2004. The patent holders and his family are seeking unspecified royalties.
Amazon's Prime Instant Video subscribers will get a perk this summer when CBS TV begins running Stephen King's drama Under the Dome. Amazon will have the exclusive rights to stream the episodes 4 days after they air on TV. It's the first time Amazon has streamed shows while they're still in season. Amazon also gets the exclusive right to sell the episodes for download.
The public comment period for generic top-level domains opened up back on February 5th. ICANN wants your feedback on when a TLD operator should be able to adopt an open or closed registration policy, and also would like your ideas on how to determine whether a string is generic. The comment period will end on March 7th.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. I believe successful teamwork is the foundation for successful business. That's why we got this team on TNT. And when you meet face-to-face, you work more efficiently. You work more effectively. But I'm in L.A., they're in Petaluma. We've got guests all over the world. And you have clients and coworkers spread around the globe, too. Coming together sounds impossible. That's why for meetings, we use GoToMeeting with HD Faces, the powerful and simple way to meet and collaborate online from wherever you are, whenever you need to connect. With GoToMeeting, it just takes a click to share your screen, work on documents in real time with a webcam. You can see everyone in HD video, just like meeting in person. It's easy to launch or join a meeting from anywhere using your computer, your phone, or your tablet, even present from your iPad. We use it when we meet with people who are, you know, new to the show. Get Sarah, Ayaz, me, and everybody a twit on GoToMeeting with HD Faces. You can see people, you can see their expressions. You know whether they're understanding what you're telling them. So try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Don't wait for this special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button and use the promo code TNT. Be sure to use that promo code TNT. GoToMeeting. Meeting is believing. And we thank Citrix and GoToMeeting with HD Faces for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now, Harry McCracken, editor-at-large for Time.com and technologizer himself. Welcome back to the show, Harry.
Hey, everybody. It's great to be here.
Great to have you, as usual. Got lots of good stuff to talk about, including that Apple room. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about cybersecurity. But let's start with the Surface Pro launch that happened this weekend. Ayaz, what's the scoop there?
The 128-gigabyte model of the Surface Pro is selling out at retail. Microsoft says, quote, customer response to the launch of Surface Pro has been amazing. The company is working with retailers to replenish stock. Paul Thurrott at the Wind Supersite saying there are Apple-like lines at Microsoft retail stores. But then there's a whole bunch of other stories trying to take this make this a negative spin. GeekWire readers are saying that they've seen very small single-digit supplies of Surface Pros at their local retailers in different parts of the country. People are commenting on Microsoft's Surface blog saying that they are frustrated, and they also report of local Best Buys only having like one, a single unit of the Surface Pro, and it was a 64-gigabyte model that was available. Now, Paul Thurrott points out that Microsoft's online store would have more units than its retail partners, but the 128-gigabyte model is also sold out at Microsoft's online store. Harry, what do you make of this? Do you think the Surface Pro has a supply problem, or is it an actual success?
It's a little hard to tell since none of us really know how many are out there, but I did see reports that at Microsoft stores, there were dozens and dozens of people in line. So in those cases, it sounds like there is some interest in this and possibly more interest than there was in Surface RT when it came out in October.
Do you think the stories about the storage space issues could have impacted how people lined up for the Surface Pro? Why exactly 128-gigabyte model sold out versus the 64?
I mean, maybe in an odd way, those stories did help because they reminded people that if you're going to spend, you know, around $1,000 for a computer that can't have its memory upgraded except through the microSD slot, it makes sense to get more memory in the first place. I would certainly tell people that the 128 gigs makes sense over the 64 gigs.
Tom, does it seem like to you that Microsoft is trying to keep supply limited so they're not taking off their OEM partners? Because this is the Intel-based version. This is the one that goes up against every other OEM.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought, right? Is Microsoft manipulating the supply chain here for nefarious reasons, either for publicity or for relations with OEMs? I guess that's possible, but I really don't think so. I think what's going on here is Microsoft doesn't want to waste money on inventory, and so they're trying to match exactly what they think each store will need, and that's an inexact science. As you know, Tim Cook built his name on manipulating at Apple. It's really hard to do. And so I think this is nothing more than Microsoft trying to manage inventory very finely. And in some cases, they're going to be wrong. And so people are going to come and show up and not be able to get stuff. And they'd rather run out than have too many sitting around on the shelves or sitting around at warehouses that get returned. So I think they're just erring on the side of shortages and then maybe claiming a little bit of a PR victory there. It's like, see, we're all sold out. But yeah, the fact that in a lot of cases there were only five in a store, of course it's going to sell out.
Sarah, there's this great headline on Apple Insider. It says, Microsoft sells out Surface Pro, just like the Zune HD did in 2009.
Ooh.
Sounds like quite the spin. I mean, the Surface Pro is what a lot of people wanted to have when it comes to an Intel tablet or a Windows 8 tablet. Do you think that spins a little too harsh?
Kind of. I agree with Harry that I think it's really early to tell. I mean, after a 1 weekend. However, I don't think that, and I agree with you, Tom, I don't think that Microsoft is going to be holding back sales too much, because what they want to do is they want to sell as many of these tablets as possible. I do think that they had a kind of rocky holiday season with the press that the Surface RT had gotten up until this launch, and they're probably just being really conservative.
Yeah, I'm thinking that Microsoft probably got burned by the amount of orders they put in for the RT, and they're like, wait a second, what if this isn't a success? This is more expensive components. They need to make sure this thing's a success out of the gate. So if they limit the supply, maybe they'll be able to build up demand as this continues.
And when the RT launched, on the launch day, there were similar stories out that they were, you know, not fulfilling enough of these, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it really is just Microsoft managing things differently, manage differently instead of thinking differently. Maybe. Let's move along to cybersecurity. There's a cybersecurity scare going on. Bloomberg reports that the president of the United States will enact cybersecurity executive order after he delivers his State of the Union address on February 12th. There will be voluntary standards for corporations and government agencies. They would encourage information sharing. And information sharing is one of the things that CISPA dealt with. CISPA was kind of torpedoed in the wake of the SOPA-PIPA legislation. I'll get too caught up in the acronyms, but this is about cybersecurity. A lot of people worried about the fact that it didn't have proper privacy protections or that it could be misused by people seeking to enforce copyright. So it was supposed to be reworked before reintroduction. However, House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Rogers and Democrat C.A. Dutch Ruppersberg said they would reintroduce the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, a.k.a. CISPA, on February 13th. So that's a day after the executive order is expected to be signed. And according to the Next Web, they haven't changed a thing in it. They're just going to put it out there. Now, the Washington Post reports that the White House is also getting ready to release a trade secrets report compiled by the U.S. Intellectual Property Enforcement Coordinator Victoria Espinel that highlights the need for companies to work with government to stop cyber espionage. We talked last week about the fact that a lot of these vulnerabilities that are now being used to justify all of this legislation were partly because of an effect that happens when one company admits they had a breach. A lot of companies kind of race to admit their breaches. But that security professionals say this kind of stuff pretty much happens all the time. This isn't a rash of unusual activity. So do we need cybersecurity policy to be updated? Probably. Is this the right way to do it? And or are they just being opportunistic by taking advantage of a recent spate of headlines? Harry, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think the things we know about are probably a tiny percentage of the breaches that happen. And clearly we do need policy on this stuff. And it is reasonable to be worried that what we have is out of date. But it's also always reasonable to be worried about essentially the government creating policy on anything relating to private enterprise, because so often they seem to complicate issues and not necessarily solve the problem they're trying to solve.
Yeah, and that's what worries me about the fact that CISPA hasn't been altered in any way, apparently. I mean, we'll wait to see what they introduce, but it sounds like they're not changing a thing. Ayaz, does that bug you?
I mean, a bit. I mean, I'll have to take a look at it again to see. Because I remember when I read it the first time, I was a bit perturbed by the fact that it was pretty vague and broad. But the thing is, getting information shared between agencies and talking to private companies, that's an admirable goal. And it's something that needs to be done, because if you just silo this information and you don't have these people talking to each other, you don't get more secure. All that happens is you have a bunch of people they're freaking out in their own little worlds. If you have a free flow of communication, the hope is that these private companies can help the agencies and the agencies can help the private companies. But it needs to be a little bit more specific. I'll have to double check.
Yeah, we'll have to wait to see what they come up with. But we also know that the Senate is working on their own version of this. And if CISPA isn't changed, it might pass the House in some grandstanding effort. But it's not likely to get through the Senate. The president previously threatened to veto it it never got to his desk, but that might happen again. Sarah, or anybody, you know, what do we need here?
I don't know. I get very discouraged when I see stories like this, because there's a lot of what's going on behind the scenes, legislation being drawn up. President says it'll never pass. Then, you know, the Senate may be working on another version of it. But the privacy concerns that affect the people are of utmost importance here. And I hate to hear, well, now it's going to be passed, or, you know, they'll try to pass it again. But no one's really changed any of the vague verbiage that was there in the first place. I don't quite know what to make of this.
Yeah, and I would like to hear, once the executive order is issued, what the executive order does that CISPA, or what CISPA does that the executive order doesn't. What kinds of, there's plenty of things we can fix right now without requiring legislation. There's lots of things that the industry needs to do to just do basic known security procedures, and maybe information sharing and the legal cover that CISPA would provide helps to encourage that. But I don't know that's necessary. And hopefully enough attention will be put on this that they will go carefully, they will revise, and they will come up with something that actually does some good. Meanwhile, we have On Devices research poll telling us about customer satisfaction with phones. What did they find, Sarah?
The iPhone 5 sucks.
What?
I'm going to kind of like troll myself in the story. Right. No, On Device research poll asked 320,000 smartphone and tablet users in the U.S., in the U.K., in France, in Germany, in Japan, and Indonesia how satisfied they were with their specific devices. So of almost 100,000 people surveyed in the U.S. alone, Motorola's Atrix HD came in first place, then Motorola's Droid Razr M in second, HTC's Resound 4G in third, Samsung's Galaxy Note 2 in fourth place, and you know who was in fifth place? The iPhone 5. Yes, people are not satisfied, or at least not as satisfied as they are with other models from other companies. If you're wondering how the survey was conducted, it was conducted via mobile web, where the company's software can detect what kind of device you are using. And then users were asked to rate satisfaction level with their device on a scale of 1 to 10. Google was included in the device satisfaction list because of its Nexus phones. So if you think, okay, well, that's in the U.S. In the U.K., just over 50,000 people polled there. Apple, the iPhone 5 was in second place, just behind HTC's One X. And in third place is the Galaxy Note 2, followed by the Galaxy S3 Mini, and then the full-size Galaxy S3. So in general, in the U.K., Samsung's all over the place, although Apple's number two. And then as far as overall mobile device satisfaction by company, Apple was in first place. So iPhone 5 is the fifth most loved phone here in the U.S., but everyone loves Apple the most. Google was second, Motorola, HTC, Nokia, and then Sony Ericsson, with Samsung not even being in the top five at all. Do we give too much credence to these sorts of things, Ayaz? I mean, if somebody's polling me, I'm on my mobile device, they're asking me to, you know, rate between 1 and 5, and I'm in sort of a sour mood. Maybe my battery's low on my iPhone 5 or something. Does this stuff really matter?
I think these are nice little stories to look at every now and then. But the thing is, when I'm looking at the survey, excuse me. I still got this cough, guys. So the deal is, I'm looking at the Motorola Atrix HD. This is a phone you intentionally have to go get.
Mm-hmm.
Not like the iPhone 5, which you see ads for all the time. You know what this thing is. Everybody knows what an iPhone is to this point. But you have to really know your phone to go, oh, you know what? I'm going to get an Atrix HD.
But don't you think that that's probably why they're so satisfied?
That's exactly why.
Because they went out of their way.
I think it's self-selecting. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, the thing I picked, I did a lot of research, and I picked the Atrix HD or the Razr M. Like, it seems like the people that go after Motorola, which is not exactly a tremendously successful cell phone company anymore, still in the red with Google, the deal is these people are going to act happier because they researched this. iPhone users, I think, would be just a larger sample size of normal people, if you want to call it that, versus Motorola users. That's right. I'm saying Motorola users aren't normal.
Harry, do you think that there's something to this, that if you try really hard not to get an Apple product, you're going to say how happy you are with it?
Generally speaking, when people do their homework, you know, they end up with something they're more likely to like, and they don't want to admit they don't like it. But I think any one survey doesn't tell us that much because we just don't know enough about the methodology. But all kinds of companies do these surveys all the time. And you start to see Motorola doing great and other companies' surveys and the iPhone not doing as well, that means something. But I wouldn't put too much credence in one survey, no matter what it says.
Yeah, the iPhone 5 being down at the bottom of this thing isn't as surprising to me as Motorola's Atrix being at the top and Samsung being at the very bottom, right? I could believe that the iPhone would be somewhere in the middle or down towards the end, but some of this stuff just doesn't ring true to my anecdotal evidence. And granted, I didn't do a scientific study that was properly weighted and sampled. I'm not sure on device did either, though. That's I think, the issue.
Yeah, and even seeing the HTC Resound there in the list, that's the one that really kind of made me take a second look and go, really? Really? Because I've heard not very good things about the Resound from people that own them. So very strange to me, too.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Pond5. This episode brought to you by the world's stock media marketplace. I know many in the audience are media makers. In fact, we got an email from Dan Luters. He's the guy that made the Tech News Today theme song. He says, I wanted to let you know that I'm releasing my 5 new albums for kids using Pond5 images for the artwork. They have tons of images to choose from, and I couldn't ask for an easier way to get top quality images at an affordable price. And he wanted to thank us on Framerate, actually, for directing him to Pond5. So if you haven't checked it out, go check out Pond5, P-O-N-D-5. They've got images. They've got sound effects. They've got videos. They also have After Effects templates and 3D models. Everything you need to be making the creative effort that you want to make. Music tracks, you're looking for a little background track, you don't want to worry about infringing on copyright or stepping on somebody's toes, go to Pond5. Once you pay for it, you can use it legally in most situations, and you don't have to keep paying for it. That's the nice thing. And if you're an artist that's creating this kind of stuff, you can sell your stuff on Pond5. It's an artist-friendly marketplace. You set the price, and they pay out 50% royalties for each and every sale. As a result, the prices are unbeatable. So is the range and quality of the content. So if you're a media maker, an artist, check out Pond5. It's P-O-N-D, the number 5. And this month, you can get 50 free stock media files at pond5.com/TNT. That's pond5.com/TNT. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Onward into the rumor land. We should have made this rumor mill.
That's my fault.
This is Nick Bilton's article. Nick Bilton does a great job, actually, of carefully writing this article. But he writes, people familiar with the company's explorations who spoke on the condition that they not be named because they are not allowed to publicly discuss unreleased products say that Apple is experimenting with wristwatch-like devices made of curved glass that run iOS. And we talked about a Willow glass in the news fuse. That glass is bendable glass. They were showing it off at CES. CNET had a good video up there, Jessica Dalcourt bending it around, showing how it works. But the problem here is that Apple's always experimenting. From what we've read, what we know, They're always playing around with prototypes. They've played with all kinds of prototypes throughout their history. So sure, it's exciting to get about the idea of an Apple Watch. But Harry, does it light a fire under you, or are you chomping at the bit for Apple to come out with a watch? Or do you think it's a good idea?
I think eventually someone will make a really cool smartwatch. I mean, basically all the ones we've seen to date, which go back 10, 15 years or more, that they've ranged from terrible, like the Microsoft Spot Watch, to not necessarily living up to all their potential, like the Pebble, which is really interesting and really clever, but still kind of a work in progress. So like everybody's saying, Apple experiments with stuff all the time. They may experiment with this and decide not to do it or not to do it for several years. But I do think that someone at some point will come out with something that nails this concept, and there is something there that's worth working on.
But a watch that just, it's all glass. It bends around your wrist and the display just shows up magically and then it goes away and you can't even tell it's there. That's exciting, right, Sarah?
Yeah, it's really exciting. Somebody in chat was like, we already have phones. What do we need this for? I think that's actually exactly the point. I mean, I don't wear my phone on my person. You know, it's either in my purse or it's on a table. You know, you kind of got to pick it up and do something and then look at it. I love the idea of curved glass on my wrist. I love it. I think Apple absolutely is testing this stuff out, and it's not the only company to do so.
As I know you're kind of a fan of the smartwatch phenomenon.
You mock
where
me
do you,
because
where
of
do
my,
you fall on this?
You
no,
mock
I'm
me.
Not mock. I'm not mocking you. I'm calling upon your expertise.
Because I was a Spot fan watch. That's I mean, a Spot fan watch. Spot watch fan. I can't
you
speak
also
today.
You were also a Spot fan watch.
That's right. I was a Spot fan watch. Okay, anyway, right. My point is, I have nothing to say today. Anyway, the Spot watch, I really love this concept of getting information on your wrist. Yeah, we carry phones. Everyone was like, why do you need an iPad? It's just a big iPhone. Apple would make wearable computing cool, and wearable computing is hot right now anyway. Mm-hmm. The fact that they would be experimenting with anything, that's not surprising. But if they could make this work, it would have to be something unique about it. I really don't know what would be so fantastic about a device that sits on your wrist all day, assuming it has a battery that can sustain a day's worth of usage. Because if it's got to be paired to a phone and it doesn't have its own unique own life on its own, what's the point of having this companion device? Apple doesn't seem like a companion device company. They are more like, okay, you buy an iPhone, you have this, you have an iPad, but they exist independently. You don't have to tether them together. But to have a tethered device the whole time, I think that's a bit of a problem. But then again, I could see them trying to do this and trying to make it work, because when they switch the Nano, that form factor from that wearable style to that new larger one, it seemed like, okay, what, are they going to go back and make the Nano to something new? And they're going to make a watch, or were they just going to completely kill wearable computing?
Yeah, that's actually a good point about the Nano, because it was like, it seemed more like a watch and now it's less like one. So where does that hole get filled? If it's not with a small iPod, is it with something else that's wearable? I think the whole tethering thing too is, I mean, but think about how devices gotta, you know, you back up through iTunes and there's certain things that you have to do when you're plugged into your computer. I mean, that's clunky. But you still have to do that with the Apple ecosystem.
It could be the iCloud watch.
Yeah.
Everything is in the cloud for you, so that's why it's very little.
Even the watch. You don't even have to wear it.
Cloud wrist. You heard it here.
Corning said at CES, by the way, that the products using Willow Glass will start coming out after mid-year, so by the end of this year. Now, that does not mean that Apple won't come out with a watch totally in the fall. If you just want to be hypey and stoke the rumor mill. Let's move on to talking about that Raytheon software that's going to track everyone based on their posts.
Yeah, as you mentioned in the news fuse, Tom, The Guardian got hold of a video that actually had the principal investigator of Raytheon, Brian Ertz, showing off the extreme scale analytics system that Raytheon had developed. What it does is gathers information about people from a variety of social services like Facebook and Twitter and Foursquare, stuff that contains not only location information about you, but habit information about you. The video actually shows Raytheon is tracking one of its own employees. So this is, you know, it's not actually just a random person. It's somebody that works within the company, but says, we notice that he seems to check into the gym, you know, at most days at 6 a.m. So if you were to want to get somebody's laptop or get access to a person, you might want to go to, you know, the club at 6 a.m. on a Monday type of a thing. Now, as we said before, Raytheon says, we haven't sold the software. The software is called Riot for Rapid Information Overlay Technology, but we have shared it with the U.S. government. This was part of a joint research and development effort, and this was back in 2010, so a few years ago. They say this helps build a security system that's capable of analyzing trillions of entities from cyberspace. Now, when I first, you know, I watched this video and I'm looking at the story and I'm kind of like, yeah, I mean, that's just having your phone in your pocket makes you easily trackable. But certainly if you're participating in a variety of social networks that are built around the idea of you sharing information about your habits, what you do, where you go, and who you're with, this is not a difficult type of software to conceive of. It really just seems like an aggregate database of a bunch of different people. Now, of course, privacy advocates do not like this at all. Ginger McCall, who's an attorney over at Electronic Privacy Information Center, which is based in Washington, says social networking sites are often not transparent about what information is shared and how it is shared. Users may be posting information that they believe will only be viewed by their friends. Instead, it's being viewed by government officials or pulled in by data collection services like the Riot Search. Again, this all seems pretty cut and dry to me. Harry, does this scare you, or do you think that if you're participating in social networks, you got to assume that government agencies are going to have access to that information?
I mean, my general philosophy is don't make things public if you don't want them to be public. And therefore, I'm way less worried about something like this than I am about actual wiretapping or monitoring things which I have not chosen to make public. I mean, it sounds like in this case, if the guy at the gym doesn't want anybody to know he's at the gym, he shouldn't be checking in there. And that doesn't seem like a terribly sophisticated example of the kind of monitoring the government can do of citizens.
Yeah, exactly. And even, you know, they shared this information with the U.S. government in 2010. Social networking is a lot more advanced in the last 3 years alone than it was at the time. Harry, I think when you say don't make something public, that's you're including networks that are supposedly somewhat private. I mean, I guess to not share anything would be to never check in anywhere.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's in theory on Facebook, you could be sharing stuff just with your friends, but that's pretty leaky right there. And my general philosophy on Facebook and Twitter and everything else is if I don't want people to know something, I just don't put it there, period.
Tom,
that's my general philosophy with the internet, is that if you're putting something out on the internet, assume that someone will be able to find it someday.
Even email, for that matter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and they were using photographs as an example, you know, saying, you know, sometimes photographs not only show what the person looks like, but contain header data that tells you what kind of camera that was used and where the coordinates were, where the photo was taken. It's like, yeah, that Flickr's been doing this for a really long time, too. I mean, some of this stuff just seems really obvious to me.
Well, it reminds me of that Please Rob Me site where people were, where somebody took all your Twitter information or your Foursquare information. They could say, hey, you're not home right now. Go rob these places. The concept being, be aware that you're sharing way more information than you think you are. I mean, now's a good time. I guess now's a good time as any to go to your Facebook settings, try to make as many things as you want private. But that doesn't mean it's going to stay private because this information is scrapable.
And there is an upside to this. I mean, obviously, Raytheon is a military contractor, so there's all kinds of assumption about what they'll do with this data involving spying, et cetera. And those are probably, you know, very good guesses. But there is also good use that this data can be put to. And that's why Raytheon was trying to say we can anonymize this data and make it available for academic research. And in that case, just seeing population trends, where people go, traffic patterns, that sort of stuff is extremely valuable just for sociological research, if nothing else. So I don't want us to be entirely paranoid, but be very paranoid, just with that positive side effect to it.
Yeah. Be very paranoid, but make sure you check in and get that mayorship.
Right, because you're helping
it's fun.
Cure the flu. Let's finish up with smart TVs. Ars Technica has an interesting article about what's wrong with them, why they're not getting better pickup.
Yeah, Ars Technica had a piece by Casey Johnston talking about smart TVs. It says the reason why they don't really work is because people don't have a good way to interact with them. The piece discusses how TV manufacturers are putting more and more options on the remote. You know, you've seen the one with like a keyboard in the back and a trackpad and then a gesture, a microphone, all those crazy things. And instead of improving the remote scheme, the user has to figure out what's the best combo because there are too many options for users right now. The piece characterizes TV as one of the stranger devices that we use. It's like the only one that's far from you. You have your PC, you have your phone, you have your tablet. Everything's right in your face. But your TV, for some reason, is always far away. Harry, do you think this is an issue of remote controls being a problem, the interactivity, or is it the software itself that causes issues for smart TVs?
Well, I think the remotes are a huge issue, and nobody has really nailed the user interface for TV. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the two internet TV boxes that are doing okay are Roku and Apple TV, both of which have, you know, they're not all that innovative remotes, but they are super simple, and they're not overloaded with buttons, and I think that makes them more approachable. But I do think that at some point there will be like a great leap forward, and whether it's Apple or somebody else, someone will figure out something which bears no resemblance to the current remote and makes the whole concept more appealing.
I mean, Sarah, you've got a lot of these. You have a Roku and an Apple TV. These set-top boxes are really simple when it comes to UI. Is that really just the issue with smart TVs? Are they trying to cram too much stuff into that Samsung TV with 15,000 apps?
Holy crap. Well, I just bought one. You know that because you hung it on my wall. Thank you, by the way. The remote is a mystery. Sometimes I sit down and I just start pressing buttons and seeing what comes up. The on-screen smart TV layout is a mess. There's a lot of cool things that the TV is capable of, but the whole thing is a mess. So yes, there are things that I can do directly through my television, But I choose to go through my Roku or my Apple TV whenever possible because those experiences are just more streamlined.
Tom, do you think these TV makers should just give up and say, look, we just make a panel for video, just put in a different device? Or should they keep trying to cram in all these apps? Intel processors are in TVs at this point. Is that even necessary when set-top boxes have it?
But the set-top boxes are no saints here either. I mean, granted, Roku is pretty easy to use when you only have 10 channels. But when you go and look at the amount of channels available that you can add to it, if you start adding all those channels, A, you'll run out of space. But B, it becomes a pain to flip back and forth between them. Nobody's cracked this yet. And beyond all of these legitimate critiques of the interface, I think what Sarah said is really important. She goes and she uses the thing that she knows has what she's looking for, right? Nobody's created an interface for either a set-top box or a television that makes it easy for you to find what you're looking for without having to know already, right? She's learned the Roku, and so she uses that. I'm the same way. I've learned Apple TV. I've learned Roku, so I rely on those more often. But what's going to win this for someone is not just having the ability to use an interface easily, but also the ability to find stuff without knowing where it is. So in other words, if I just say like, hey, I heard about a new TV show, The Following, I can just easily turn on my television, somehow tell it I want to find The Following, and it shows me how to watch it. That's the key.
Well, and I think that's why these rumors of Apple building, you know, the actual new Apple TV. I mean, not only will the rumors not go away because it's Apple, but because if Apple or any company could figure out how to make a set-top box just part of the TV that wasn't a mess, because at least the solution that I am presented with in my living room right now is, then that's something that we want. That's something that doesn't exist yet.
Actually, it isn't that what Google TV was supposed to be? It's built into LG TVs, a whole bunch of televisions, to the point where there actually is a UI that's standardized. Harry, do you think that's the kind of way this could have worked? I mean, it has an actual standardized UI for smart TVs as opposed to going, what's in your app store? What's in this app store? It's all Android at this point.
Well, and the theory is that the web over time usually wins out over proprietary stuff. And there are technologies for making web stuff work on the TV. But generally speaking, when interfaces get good, it's not through open standards. It's through stuff that at first is really proprietary. So my guess is that if there are breakthroughs, that those will come from Apple or a startup or Microsoft or who knows who, and eventually it'll become more open.
All right, let's finish up by telling you, if you want more on set-top boxes, watch Framerate, twit.tv/FR, but also the randomizer. I don't know if you missed it. I did, actually. But February 5th, a group at gnut.co.uk, that's gnut.co.uk, put up a Kickstarter campaign to crowdsource a Death Star. Well, an answer has been heard by Simon Kwan, who wants to crowdfund a Rebel Alliance X-Wing squadron to fight said Death Star. And there's a great description going through like how they would build it, how much money they have. They even have stretch goals. First of all, they have to make $11 million, which is the same amount that Star Wars A New Hope made or cost to make. That's how they make the X-Wing. Then if they get, it looks like $4 billion, then they'll build an entire squadron. It's more for fun than for practicality, but they talk about building Y-wings and how the Death Star, that now that it's crowdsourced, will likely solve the exhaust port problem. So hopefully they'll be able to crowdsource finding another vulnerability to destroy it. It's the first time I've seen Kickstarter used for fun. Not funds. Yeah, exactly. they're not seriously trying to raise money here. Am I the only one that's entertained by this?
Sure. It's mildly entertaining. I feel like Kickstarter is supposed to be a tool, right?
Yeah, I can't believe there's actually money on this. $127,000 have been pledged to this. I assume that nobody expects to have to be, they're not committed to pay this.
Right.
Because nobody's going to actually get to $11 million. Although I'm really curious what happens if these guys get the money. Are they going to try? Are they really going to try to do this? Are they going to say, oh, crud, we're not supposed to use Kickstarter this way?
Well, I mean, if they have $11 billion, million. Yeah, I'd try.
Well, 11 million.
Or 11 million, sir.
Yeah. Kickstarter would not have approved this if they didn't have at least some intention of following through on it. Kickstarter would have kicked it out. Maybe Kickstarter has a sense of humor.
Until it gets funded.
Yeah, and you basically have to commit to those funds. So the $127,000 that is pledged, if they got $11 million, those people would have to give the money. But a lot of people may be thinking, dude, if they raise $11 million and build an X-Wing, sure, I'm in. I will back that. Why not? Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Ring Central. When we built the studio in Petaluma, one of the things we had to do was put in a phone system. And one of the things we didn't want to do was spend a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of effort building an old-fashioned PBX system is what they're called. Usually you have to put them in the basement. We wanted to keep that basement open for Burke to be able to experiment down there. So Russell, our IT guy, said, get a cloud-based phone system through Ring Central. No-brainer. We love Ring Central. No startup costs, no PBX hardware to install or maintain, and allows us to easily customize all of our call handling. You can get your voicemail and your email, get fax messages on your smartphone, and now they have a feature, business SMS. You can send text messages to customers and colleagues from your business phone number from Ring Central. You don't have to use your personal cell phone to do it. Ring Central offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 a month per user, and you can start right now, 30-day risk-free trial, and a special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, get a second phone free up to 20 phones. So call this number for our listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Once again, 800-543-9980. Or go to ringcentral.com. Use that promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Go check them out, ringcentral.com. Let's see what's incoming. Or wait, calendar.
Jeez, Tom.
That's what's incoming.
Come on. How could you possibly skip over the best part of the show? Yeah, the 11th Usenix conference on file and storage technologies is tomorrow. It runs through the 15th in San Jose, California. Usenix.org for more information there. And Apple CEO Tim Cook is going to speak at the Goldman Sachs Technology and Internet Conference for the second year in a row tomorrow. Apple's going to present the event live. It's an audio-only stream.
Now, let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Allison from NozillaCast, a longtime friend of both this show and Buzz Out Loud, called in with an explanation of why she thinks it's pretty darn-teed that we will not see Microsoft Office for Linux.
Hi, TNT crew. This is Allison Sheridan of the NozillaCast podcast. A few years ago, I was at a Gartner conference where Steve Ballmer was asked when Microsoft was going to make Office for Linux. Despite thunderous applause to that question, he came out with the perfect reason why that was not going to happen. He said, look, the Mac business is a good little business for us. It's a good business, but it's a little business. Now, the Linux business is even smaller, and it's completely populated by people who don't want to give us money. I gotta say, as condescending as that answer was, it made perfect business sense to me. So I'm with Iaz. I think there's no chance Microsoft will make Office for Linux.
I still think there's a small chance that it could make sense. Harry, are you on Allison and Iaz's side? Are you going to join me?
You know, I think Ballmer spoke and his rationale sounds logical to me. It's Office for iPad I'm still curious about because that rumor has been hanging around for over a year.
All right. You guys are probably right. Let's go ahead and read some emails.
Surprised Microsoft hasn't pushed the fact that it's on the web. You can access it on the web just fine. Anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Got an email from Mark of Sacramento. He says, hey, guys, I was listening to episode 684 while returning from a trip to Disneyland and heard Iaz say how Apple may be the one company to push mobile payments into everyday use. As I thought about this, I believe he may be onto the right track. At Disneyland, when you go through the entry gates, they're using an iPod Touch with a similar case as the ones used in the Apple Store. They scan multi-day passes, and if it's the first day using it, they take your picture with the device to associate you with your multi-day pass. Then every time you enter the park and they scan it again, your picture shows up on the iPod Touch, and they can see it as you are using the multiple-day pass and not someone else. I thought about this, and wouldn't it be great if you could use Passbook for your park ticket, room charge card for purchases, FastPass tickets, etc.? Hopefully, this is the beginning of more advances to come, and if it means using Passbook or an app, that's fine. I already have ditched my wallet for an iPhone case that holds my driver's license and a couple of credit cards. If I could ditch the credit cards and be able to use Passbook everywhere that takes credit cards, that'd be nice. Maybe it's going to take companies like Apple and Disney to push this technology into mainstream use.
I think you probably need Google on board as well, actually, through Google Wallet, because that's becoming the more dominant operating system, or at least the more common operating system in people's pockets. But overall, I agree with what he's saying.
Got another email from Steve in Tokyo, who says, listening to your discussion about the PlayStation being a nerve center made me think about a product that's available in the Japanese market now. It's called Nasune. He actually phonetically spelled it for me. Thank you. N-A-S-N-E, Nasune, as in Neptune. A network digital video recorder which can send media to laptops or tablets or smartphones or your Vita up to two at a time. You can also set the DVR to record shows using your smartphone over the internet. He says, I think the announcement will be basically that built into the PlayStation. When you turn on your TV, you can do everything, Blu-ray, TV, games, through the console, and your media will be available on any device in your house. A nice offering, but they could do more. What if they took the PlayStation, added the Nasune DVR functionality, made the streaming work over the internet for live and pre-recorded shows, and added a unified search function, like a Google TV, for movies and TV shows across the TV guide, as well as different applications like Netflix and Hulu, both available on the PS3 now. Basically making a PlayStation / Google TV / Slingbox. Hook up an external drive with all your media and have access anywhere you go. Just food for thought.
Cool. Like that. Like that. Nasune.
Very well Nasune. Thought out.
Very cool. All right, that is it for us today. Harry McCracken, thanks as always for sharing your expertise with us. Tell folks about technologizer.com and where they can find you online.
Sure. Well, if you go to technologizer.com, you'll land inside time.com and see all my stuff. And you can also click on the tech tab at time.com to see me, but also all the other folks that write about tech for Time.
Yeah, definitely check it out. I love your work, Harry. I always learn all kinds of new stuff. You know, one of the things I like, especially, is when you do the historical stuff, too.
Those are always fun. The only thing people like more than new stuff about technology is really old stuff about technology.
Yeah, totally. Check it out, technologizer.com. Follow Harry on Twitter, and you can follow us at our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, place to let us know what stories you'd like us to cover. Vote on the suggestions of other people. If you're like, no, don't cover that, vote it down. If you like it, vote it up, technewstoday.reddit.com. And you can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT. TNT Show. We'll be back tomorrow with more tech news. Don't miss it. We'll see you there.